Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Wednesday, March 20th, 2019. Coming up this hour,
Wall Street awaits the latest interest rate forecast from the Fed.
China pushed back against U.S. trade demands.
Shares of Bayer plunge after a legal loss on Roundup cancer claims.
And new questions emerge about pilot training on Boeing's MAX jets.
President Trump heads to Ohio today. Plus, it looks like former Vice President Joe Biden is telling supporters he is running for the White House. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower. The Nets in Sacramento with a big comeback and a layup with less than a second to go to win by two. The Islanders, Rangers, and Devils all lost. Fairleigh Dickinson, a winner in the NCAA tournament.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak. On Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Karen Moscow.
And I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by Sector Spider ETFs. Why buy a single stock when you can invest in the entire sector? Visit SectorSPDRS.com or call 1-866-SECTOR-ETF.
And global stocks are little changed right now ahead of today's Federal Reserve decision. 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures, they're higher, up 5 points. Dow futures up 48, Nasdaq futures up 14. The DAX in Germany down 0.8%, while the CAC in Paris is little changed, and so is the FTSE 100. 10-year Treasury up 3/32, yield 2.59%. The yield on the 2-year, 2.46%. NYMEX crude oil, little change, down 1 cent to $59.02 a barrel. COMEX gold is down 0.33%, down $4.50 to $13.02 an ounce. The euro, $1.1344. The yen, 111.59. Nathan.
Karen, we begin with the Federal Reserve issuing its latest policy decision today at 2 p.m. Wall Street time. For details, we turn to Michael McKee in our Bloomberg 99.1 Washington newsroom.
Once again, it's not what they do, no rate changes expected, but what they say that will matter to markets. The central bankers will release new economic forecasts and an updated dot plot that are expected to confirm market expectations for no additional rate moves this year. Investors will be watching Chairman Jay Powell carefully to see if he ratifies that idea and underscores Fed flexibility on policy. The central bankers are also expected to set a target level for the size and makeup of the balance sheet and a timetable for ending the runoff. In Washington, Michael McKee, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Michael, thank you. Trade talks back in focus. Sources tell Bloomberg some U.S. officials are concerned that China is pushing back against demands from the White House. Bloomberg's Sarah McGregor reports.
We're hearing from our sources that China has come back to the U.S. and it seems to be backpedaling a bit on some things it had promised over data protection for pharmaceuticals and a host of other issues. And that, of course, is going to be alarming for the U.S., who's really trying to get a deal within weeks.
And Bloomberg News has learned U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer and Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin are heading to Beijing for talks next week, while Vice Premier Liu He travels to Washington the first week in April.
Now, over the past year, the trade war has been the biggest risk for investors, but now the slowdown in China tops the list. Bloomberg's John Tucker joins us live with details. Good morning, John.
Yeah, Nate, the latest fund manager survey by Bank of America Merrill Lynch shows about a third of investors say slower growth in China is their biggest concern. That replaces trade war risks, which had topped the list for 9 straight months. According to the survey of 186 fund managers conducted this month, a corporate credit crunch is the third biggest concern, followed by U.S. politics. The survey also shows that shorting European equities is seen as the most crowded global cross-asset trade. John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
John, thank you. In the U.K., the battle over Brexit is coming to a head with just 9 days until Britain leaves the EU. Bloomberg Sebastian Salek joins us live from London with the latest. Good morning, Sebastian.
Good morning, Karen and Nathan. The debate now is over how long the delay to Brexit should be. Prime Minister May drafting a request for an extension in order to reach that deal that will win a backing in Parliament. But she's facing a battle with Brussels and her own cabinet ministers over how much time she needs. Sky News reported that May will ask for a short delay in her letter, but the risk there is that it could just be postponing a chaotic cliff-edge departure by 3 months, prolonging the uncertainty and increasing the potential costs for business. Live in London, I'm Sebastian Salek, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Sebastian, thank you. Shares of Bayer, known as Bayer here in the U.S., are down 12% after the company lost the first phase of a trial over claims that Roundup causes cancer. Ed Baxter has the story from our Bloomberg 960 newsroom in San Francisco.
This is the case of a man who sprayed the herbicide on his property for decades. In the second phase, jurors will hear evidence including emails that the company manipulated public opinion to conceal health concerns. Byers released a statement saying it is disappointed with the jury decision, but continues to believe that Roundup does not cause cancer. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Ed, thank you. We're getting more details about the Boeing Lion Air crash from October, and they're raising questions about pilot training. Bloomberg News has learned an off-duty pilot riding in the cockpit one day before the same plane crashed into the Java Sea helped save that flight from a similar fate. Bloomberg's Remy Innocencio reports.
The second-to-last Lion Air flight before the one that crashed actually had the same problem, and it turned out that there was an extra man in the cockpit, an off-duty pilot who was in the jump seat, he was able to diagnose and then fix the problem with the malfunctioning flight control, told the crew to cut power to the motor that was driving the nose down because there was a malfunctioning sensor there for airspeed. So he basically saved the plane, but the next day we now know that that plane did crash. But cutting power in that situation apparently is something that all pilots do need to memorize. So that person did know. The question, though, is why didn't those other pilots know as well?
Meanwhile, scrutiny of Boeing and the FAA is ramping up, with the U.S. Department of Transportation requesting a wide-ranging review of how 737 MAX jets were certified.
In other corporate news this morning, shares of FedEx are down more than 5% in early trading after the company cut its annual profit forecast for the second time in 3 months. FedEx cites slowing global growth for the disappointing outlook, plus rising costs from its acquisition of a European company in 2016.
Shares of UBS lower by 2%. CEO Sergio Ermotti giving a gloomy outlook to investors at a London conference, saying the first quarter was one of the worst environments in recent history for UBS.
BMW is warning earnings this year will fall well below last year's levels. The German automaker says pre-tax profit is expected to decline by more than 10%. That has shares of BMW lower by 4% this morning. Straight ahead, the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg. It's 5:07 on Wall Street. Michael Barr has more of what's happening around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. President Trump heads to Ohio today after blasting General Motors over its closing of an Ohio plant. Over the weekend, President Trump slammed GM for closing the Lordstown plant. The president will visit a tank production facility in Lima, about 200 miles away from Lordstown. President Trump used a joint appearance at the White House with Brazil's president to maintain his criticism of the late Republican Senator John McCain. Expanding on his tweets of the past few days, the president told reporters McCain's vote against an Obamacare repeal was unforgivable.
He told us hours before that he was going to repeal and replace, and then for some reason, I think I understand the reason, he ended up going thumbs up. And frankly, had we even known that, I think we would have gotten a vote because we could have gotten somebody else. So I think that's disgraceful. Plus, there are other things. I was never a fan of John McCain, and I never will be.
Meghan McCain says President Donald Trump's life is, quote, pathetic after attacks against her father. Former Vice President Joe Biden is said to be telling some supporters that he is making plans to enter the race for the 2020 Democratic presidential nomination. According to a person familiar with the matter, an announcement of his plans is expected in the coming weeks. New Zealand police say the man alleged to have gunned down 50 people in two Christchurch mosques was on his way to another target when he was detained. Police Commissioner Mike Bush.
We strongly believe we stopped him on the way to a further attack. So lives were saved by our staff, courageous in their intervention.
The shooter walked into a packed Central City mosque on Friday and opened fire, and then he drove across the city to another mosque and continued the rampage. He was arrested as he fled that scene. Vice President Mike Pence took an aerial tour of the hardest-hit flood zones in Nebraska yesterday. The vice president says the American people will stand with those affected by the disaster.
At the president's direction, we will expedite that request to make sure that the families and communities that have been impacted have access to the federal resources and support that is designed for exactly times like these.
International aid is trickling into Southeast African countries after a deadly and powerful cyclone swept through last week. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air, and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Nathan?
Thanks, Michael. It's 5:09 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Here's John Stashower.
Nathan, a wild couple of games for the Nets in California. Sunday in L.A. against the Clippers, they were up 18, down 10 with a minute to go, lost at the buzzer. Last night in Sacramento, they were down by 25 after getting outscored by 17 in the third quarter. They won the fourth by 27. D'Angelo Russell scored 27 of his 44 points in the fourth quarter. Rondé Hollis-Jefferson with a layup with 0.8 of a second to go. The Nets beat the Kings 123-121. NCAA tournament in Dayton, a win for the Knights of Fairleigh Dickinson, the first in school history, 82-76 over Prairie View A&M. For Darnell Edge, 33 points.
I think we just got to stay humble and just stay hungry. You know, go out there, you know, it's March Madness, so crazy things happen all the time. So this was just a big win for our program. We look to go out there and just continue to play the basketball we play and just share the ball and just be together.
They're off to Salt Lake City to play top seed Gonzaga tomorrow night. Belmont advances to play Maryland after beating Temple 81-70. Hofstra eliminated from the NIT, losing at NC State 84-78. Islanders had only 13 shots on goal, shut out by the Bruins 5-0. They're now 2 points behind Washington, who beat the Devils 4-1 at the Garden. The Rangers lost to Detroit 3-1. Yankees are going to have to start the year with Dellin Betances on the no longer disabled list, but injured list, shoulder inflammation. The big baseball story, the Mike Trout contract with the Angels, it'll total $430 million. For the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. Nathan.
And, John, the Washington Capitals will get a chance to celebrate their Stanley Cup championship with President Trump at the White House on Monday, though one Caps player, Brett Connolly, says he will skip the ceremony. The NBA's Golden State Warriors decided not to go to the White House after both of their past two championships. S&P futures up 3 points, Dow futures up 32, NASDAQ futures up 9.5. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And it's almost 5:12 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by National Realty, NRIA, developers of high return income producing properties. For investor partners, see them at NRIA.net.
Global news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Global stocks mixed ahead of today's Federal Reserve decision. U.S. futures are higher, while equities in Europe are falling. In Asia today, investors adopted a cautious stance, with stocks ending the session largely unchanged. Bloomberg's Juliet Solly has more from our Singapore bureau. Good morning, Juliet.
Good morning, Karen. Well, markets in Australia and Hong Kong saw modest declines, while South Korea reversed earlier losses as Samsung rallied into the close. Samsung shares had dragged earlier in the session after forecasting a difficult year in its component business. Nintendo and Sony shares in Tokyo fell after Google announced a major push into the video game market with a new streaming service that is said to not require users to have a PC or console. In Singapore, I'm Juliet Solly, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Juliet, thank you. The Federal Reserve rate decision comes down at 2 o'clock Wall Street time, and we're watching for earnings today from General Mills and Micron Technology. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. Former Vice President Joe Biden has begun telling some supporters that he's making plans to jump into the 2020 Democratic presidential race. According to a person familiar with the conversations, an announcement is expected in the coming weeks. President Donald Trump's re-election effort, and the president is set to visit Ohio for the 10th time to bolster that since taking office. President Trump is scheduled to speak today at the Lima Army Tank Plant. He's also appearing at a re-election fundraiser in Canton. In the NBA, the Nets won along with Golden State. In the NHL, the Islanders were shut out by the Bruins 5-0. The Devils lost at the Capitals 4-1. The Rangers lost, and it is the first regular game of the MLB season. The A's play the Mariners in Japan. Global news 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Welcome to spring, Michael. Thank you. 5:19 on Wall Street. Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios, This is Bloomberg Daybreak. Kevin Divney is our guest this morning. He's Senior Portfolio Manager at Russell Investment Management. Always good to talk with you, Kevin. We're all awaiting the Federal Reserve decision out at 2 p.m. Wall Street time. What will you be listening for from the Fed today?
Good morning. I think we'll be looking for an affirmation of the dovish stance that they pivoted to last year and not expecting any major changes here. Any indications about pressures on inflation, I think, other than wages, would be something that's concerning. The labor market looks good. We'd like to see them affirm that. It seems to be, if anything, accelerating. And the content of the labor market, with wage growth being higher than it's been in 10 years, I think is an argument for inflationary pressures. But we're not seeing inflationary pressures in other parts of the economy. So I think if that comes through, they'll be able to affirm this dovish stance, which has really helped this rally.
So then you're not expecting any changes to the dot plot or any further guidance on the balance sheet unwind?
I think there's been so much communicated by the Fed in the last 90 days that there'll probably be somewhat of a pause. Obviously, the market's getting used to Powell. I'm not expecting any significant changes. And it's pricing uncertainty right now, I think, is what, if you look at what bond yields have been doing and expectations for the raise in 2019, the context of how the underlying economy is doing. From the corporate side, we've seen a deceleration in earnings expectations, whether that's troughing and some of the other blips we've seen in some of the mixed data, whether they're going to affirm that the economy is still robust is, I think, more what the market's going to be looking for today.
Yeah, I was going to ask you a little bit about earnings as well, because we've seen most of the S&P 500 report their earnings and most of them beating expectations. Can that continue in an environment where the expectation is that we're going to continue to see a slowing growth around the world?
So we've seen fourth quarter was very good. And I think one thing that was extremely interesting is that the margins have not really not meaningfully declined. The expectations for earnings in 2019 on an annual basis is around 5% right now. And that's comparing to, say, a 22% in 2019. The market discounted that. I think we're at an interesting point because those expectations may have troughed. And they could accelerate for two reasons. Number one, a lot of revisions were pushed down because of the uncertainty around macro policy, things like Brexit, things like the tariffs. If that uncertainty comes up, we may see earnings revision going upward. At the same time, the ability of companies to keep margins high, even though they may have peaked recently, they are still much higher than they were 10 or 15 years ago. And what that does, that gives a multiple expansion pressure upward on the market, and that has driven a lot of this rally over the long term.
What do you see as the biggest headwind for markets right now? I ask because the latest Bank of America Merrill Lynch survey says now that it's slowing Chinese growth as opposed to the trade war.
That is the largest negative catalyst we heard in the fourth quarter earnings season. So it's very interesting. Companies that actually beat, they beat on domestic demand and domestic customers. So the Chinese deceleration, how far it goes and what the bottom of that is, we know it's slowing. But at the flip side of that, the trade war that gets into the back burner may get people more positive about that. But a negative shock from the Chinese financial system could probably be one of the largest shocks to the market right here. And on the consumer side, it still looks like there's robust demand on the ground in China, but a lot of people are looking for, are there evidence of a large policy mistake that the Chinese economic managers have made over the last 5 years?
How would you assess how the Chinese government has weathered this storm for the most part? I mean, we've seen a lot of stimulus, a lot of liquidity put into the Chinese market. Are they doing the right things?
It's hard to say, but what we can see is the conditions on the ground, looking at U.S. companies that are investing there, seem good. I heard a CEO mention recently that it's actually gotten easier for them to do business in China over the last 24 months, which is kind of a surprise given what the headlines are doing. I think that what market participants are worried about is that the Chinese policymakers are overconfident in their ability to fine-tune the economy, and that is something we have not really seen them have to wrestle with. And they're doing the right things. They're probably saying the right things. But on some underlying forces, can they manage this large economy? With at the same time, the pressures from the middle class could be something that reverberates back if they become very unsatisfied and demand shrinks. But the consumer seems very healthy in China from a demand perspective. What we'll be watching is there something on their consumer balance sheet that hasn't got out into the marketplace.
Only about 10 seconds left. What are you thinking from the Fed this year? Rate cut, rate hike?
I think maybe one hike right now, given what's going on.
All right, we'll leave it there for now. Again, the Federal Reserve's policy decision out at 2 p.m. Wall Street time. Kevin Divney, Senior Portfolio Manager at Russell Investment Management. Thanks again for being with us ahead of that. And taking a look at the markets this morning, they're pointing to modest gains at the open. S&P futures up nearly 4 points. Dow futures up 39. NASDAQ futures up 11. And you are listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And it is 525 on Wall Street. You're listening to Bloomberg Radio, streaming live 24 hours a day on the Bloomberg Business app, radio.com, the iHeartRadio app, and Bloomberg.com.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991 to Boston. Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco. Bloomberg 960 to the country. Sirius XM Channel 119 and around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
And it's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Karen Moscow.
I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by Poly. Plantronics and Polycom are now Poly, the global communications company that powers authentic human connection and collaboration. Poly, the power of many.
And we're just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. U.S. futures are higher ahead of today's Federal Reserve decision, with expectations set for a dovish tone from the central bank. Richard Turnell is chief investment strategist for BlackRock.
It seems very unlikely we're going to get any change in Fed policy.
Neil Duane is chief investment officer at Allianz.
We're going to see this week how dovish the Fed is.
Richard Kelly heads up global strategy for TD Bank.
We've already priced in so much dovishness in this market. There's a really high hurdle for the Fed to say something that would tremendously push us.
And tune in for live coverage of the decision and Jerome Powell's news conference on Bloomberg Radio and Television at 2 p.m. Wall Street time.
In Europe, Prime Minister Theresa May's office says it will not ask the EU for a long delay to Brexit. Bloomberg's Robert Hutton has more from London.
Theresa May is drafting a request for more time to reach a deal that will win the endorsement of Britain's sceptical parliament. But she's facing a battle with Brussels and her own cabinet ministers over how much time she needs. The risk is that if Britain chooses a short extension to the Brexit deadline, it could just be postponing a chaotic cliff-edge departure by 3 months. In London, Robert Hutton, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Robert, thank you. UBS CEO Sergio Ermotti gave a gloomy outlook to investors at a London conference, saying conditions in the first 3 months have been among the toughest in years. Shares of UBS are down 2%.
BMW's warning earnings this year will fall well below last year's level, saying pre-tax profit is expected to decline by more than 10%. It has shares of BMW lower by 4%.
Shares of Bayer, known as Bayer here in the U.S., are down more than 10% after the company lost the first phase of a U.S. trial over claims that Roundup causes cancer. Bloomberg's Charlie Pellet reports.
It now moves to a second phase to determine liability and damages in the case of a man who sprayed the herbicide on his property for decades. Analysts say after Bayer lost its first U.S. trial over Roundup, yesterday's decision probably edges the company one step closer to a settlement. Charlie Pellet, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Charlie, thank you. FedEx shares are down more than 6%. The package delivery company cut its annual profit forecast for the second time in 3 months, citing slowing global growth and rising costs from a 2016 acquisition in Europe.
S&P futures higher, up 3.5 points. Dow futures up 34. NASDAQ futures up about 11. And straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg.
Thanks, Karen. It's 5:33 on Wall Street, and Michael Barr is here to tell us more of what's going on around the world. Michael.
Thank you very much, Nathan. Former Vice President Joe Biden has begun telling supporters he is going to jump into the 2020 Democratic race for the White House. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter has the story.
Biden has already been leading in the polling of primary voters, so expectations are that he'd be the instant front runner. His name recognition is high. He has appeal to Rust Belt voters who went Trump in 2016. But some see his age, he'd be 78 at general election time, as a detriment. He's also more moderate than many primary voters in the Democratic Party. He should have support from some donors, though, who have held back, wanting to know if there would be a run. Sources say he's lining up donors now so he can set a new record for the first 24-hour of donations. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
President Trump hits the road today, traveling to Ohio. He'll visit the Joint Systems Manufacturing Center in Lima, a military tank factory. Looming over the visit, the president's tweets over the weekend slamming General Motors for closing a plant in Lordstown. The president will attend evening fundraising events in Ohio before heading back to Washington. Vice President Mike Pence surveyed the damage in the hardest-hit flood zones in Nebraska yesterday.
The American people are going to stand with people across Nebraska, across Iowa, across all of the 8 states that have been impacted by this severe weather and this flooding.
The vice president says the White House will expedite federal aid for those affected. International aid is trickling into the East African countries of Mozambique, Zimbabwe, and Malawi after a cyclone triggered deadly flooding. Deborah Nguyen is with the World Food Program and tells us of days of continuing rainfall.
There is no running water, no power. So wherever they find a shelter, the living conditions are very difficult. And hospitals have been destroyed as well. So there is no medical health facilities right now in the city.
Hundreds were killed, and it's feared the death toll could go past 1,000. Global News 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Michael, thank you. It's 5:35 on Wall Street. That's time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Here's John Stashower.
Nathan, the Brooklyn Nets made some history last night in Sacramento. A comeback for the ages.
Nets get the rebound, can take the lead. Rondé, drive and kick. Russell on the wing, gives it up. Dudley straight on three. Good! Jared Dudley puts the Nets on top with a minute 10 to go. They've erased a 25-point fourth quarter deficit.
WFAN the call. The Kings tied the game. The Nets won at 123-121 on a Rondé Hollis Jefferson layup with less than a second to go. In the NBA shot clock era, teams down by 25 or more in the fourth quarter had won three times, had lost 3,028 times. The Nets in their history were 0-178. D'Angelo Russell, a career-high 44 points, 27 in the fourth. NCAA tournament underway. First four in Dayton, and Fairleigh Dickinson won the opener. The Knights edged Prairie View A&M 82-76 as Darnell Edge scored 33 points. FDU now off to Salt Lake City to play Gonzaga tomorrow night. Will try to be the second 16 seed to ever beat a 1 seed. The first time it happened was last year. Belmont beat Temple, and in the NIT, Hofstra lost at NC State. All three local hockey teams lost. The Islanders, one of their worst outings of the season, shut out by the Bruins 5-0. They only had 13 shots. Washington moved back ahead of them in the division with a 4-1 win over the Devils. The Rangers beaten by Detroit 3-2. Yankee reliever Dellin Betances will begin the season on the injured list. Shoulder inflammation. Mike Trout starts his season with the Angels with a new contract. 12 years, $432 million. A's and Mariners just now starting the season in Japan. For the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. Nathan?
All right, John, thank you. It's 5:37 on Wall Street. The latest edition of Bloomberg Business Week is on newsstands now with the cover on Facebook's never-ending crisis. Also in this week's issue, how a singer from Denmark became a pop sensation in China. Lucas Shaw wrote the story for Bloomberg Business Week.
One of his songs had started to really make it big in China, and he started to go there in 2014. And so since 2014, though he is pretty much unknown in the U.S., the U.K., Germany, Japan, the world's biggest music markets, he's had 8 number one songs in China.
You can read more about this and other stories in this week's edition of Bloomberg Business Week. Know what matters and why. Visit businessweek.com or pick up a copy of the magazine on newsstands now. And listen to Business Week with Carol Masser and Jason Kelly weekdays at 2 p.m. Wall Street time on Bloomberg Radio. It's 5:38 on Wall Street time for the Tri-State Business Report with Bloomberg's Ed Khoury. Good morning, Ed.
Hi, Nathan. Millennial makeup company Glossier just became New York's latest tech unicorn. Sources tell Bloomberg the beauty startup is now valued at more than $1.2 billion after its latest round. Glossier says it raised $100 million from investors led by Sequoia Capital. A couple of New Jersey banks are merging. First Bank will acquire Grand Bank. It's a stock deal worth about $19.4 million. The merger has been approved by the boards of directors of both institutions and is expected to be wrapped up in the third quarter of 2019. Connecticut lawmakers have advanced several bills that touch on just about every aspect of gambling in the state, including adding more casinos and legalized sports wagering. But members of the General Assembly Public Safety Committee say details of the proposals remain unfinished. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey. Nathan?
Thanks, Ed. It's 5:39 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Steve Potosk, and on KNX in Los Angeles, we're talking about Disney closing the deal to buy 21st Century Fox.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and on WCCO in Minneapolis, we're watching for earnings from General Mills.
I'm Marcus Carlson on Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio in London. We're reporting on Inmarsat. Shares soar as the satellite company receives a $3.3 billion takeover offer.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on WHAS in Louisville. FedEx cut its annual profit forecast for the second time in 3 months on slowing global growth.
I'm Patrice Sikora, and for WLW in Cincinnati, I'm reporting Kroger will sell its Turkey Hill line of drinks and ice cream products to Peak Rock Capital of Austin, Texas. No word on the term.
I'm Ed Corey on WWJ in Detroit. I'm reporting Ford will ship 550 jobs to its Kentucky SUV plant.
Those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. And today we get a look at the semiconductor sector with earnings from Micron Technology. Bloomberg's Jeff Bellinger with the preview.
Analysts have low expectations for Micron sales. Bloomberg Intelligence says memory prices have declined over the last year, so comparisons to 2018 are going to be difficult. Manufacturing advances likely drove gross margins and raised supplies. Micron's product mix will be important. Jeff Bellinger, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Jeff, thank you. You are listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Coming up to 5:41 on Wall Street, straight ahead, we check in with Bloomberg Opinion, our global platform for fast commentary and instant analysis of some of this morning's top stories ahead of the Fed decision at 2 p.m. Wall Street time. You're listening to Bloomberg Radio.
Global news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Global stocks are mixed as investors adopt a cautious stance before the Federal Reserve policy decision and await further news on U.S.-China trade talks where negotiators remain at odds. Miners and car makers are leading a decline in the stocks Europe 600 index as BMW warned earnings would fall. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 3 points this morning. Dow futures up 28. NASDAQ futures up about 9. The DAX in Germany's down 1%. 10-year Treasury up 5/32, yield 2.59%. The yield on the 2-year, 2.45%. NYMEX crude oil down 0.33% or 20 cents to $58.83 a barrel. COMEX gold is down 0.3% or $3.60 to $13.02.90 an ounce. The euro, $1.1349, and the yen, 111.52. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, the race for the 2020 Democratic presidential nomination may be getting a new front runner. A person familiar with the matter says former Vice President Joe Biden has told some supporters that he's making plans to jump into the race, joining a diverse field of candidates vying to challenge President Donald Trump. Meanwhile, the president is traveling to Lima, Ohio today. He'll visit a tank plant and later will attend evening fundraising events before heading back to Washington. In NBA action, the Nets won along with Golden State. In the NHL, the Islanders were shut out by the Bruins 5-0. The Devils lost to the Capitals 4-1. The Rangers lost. And in baseball, it is the first regular game of the MLB season. The A's are playing the Mariners right now in Japan. Global news 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right. Nothing like baseball at 5:49 on Wall Street, Michael. Thank you. We are live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios. Time to check in with Bloomberg Opinion. It's our platform that offers informed perspectives on a range of global topics and expert data-driven commentary on breaking news. Bloomberg Opinion editor Jennifer Ryan joins us from our London bureau. And Jen, as we await the Federal Reserve's policy decision at 2 p.m. Wall Street time, Kamal Sreekumar is looking at an important dissonance in the markets. What's his focus this morning?
So he's looking at the S&P 500, which has risen 13% in 2019, on the idea that the Fed's dovishness is going to allow the economy to sidestep a recession. On the other hand, you've got the yield on the benchmark 10-year Treasury falling below 2.6%. So simply put, the optimism seen in equities is not shared by bond traders. And historically, the bond market has had a much better record of predicting the economy. And therefore, this divergence has important implications for investor asset allocations.
Yeah, let's talk about those implications and why Sri Kumar sees this difference here and what accounts for it.
This is all traceable to statements made by Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell at the beginning of the year. So Powell hinted on January 4th that he wouldn't hesitate to slow the reduction in the Fed's balance sheet if needed, and signaled there was no preset path for raising rates. The Fed added fuel to this approach in the rally in equities when it decided January 30th not to raise rates, and Powell suggested at the press conference that the central bank had reached the end of its rate hiking cycle. However, Powell's optimism on the economy did not push up bond yields. Bond investors are focused on developments that point to a slowing of the U.S. and global economies. You've got, for example, U.S. manufacturing output dropping in February for the second successive month, and core consumer price index rising just 2.1% over the past year. So that's not exactly runaway inflation.
All right. So what's the takeaway for investors then?
Well, Powell realizes that even if the central bank were to increase rates just once in 2019, that could cause the yield curve to invert. And the Fed could even cut rates or resume quantitative easing if global conditions worsen more than anticipated. Equities are reacting to short-term optimism, but the bond market appears to anticipate problems next year and in 2021.
All right. And again, the Fed policy decision out at 2 p.m. Wall Street time. We will have full coverage, as always, here on Bloomberg Radio. In the meantime, let's turn to Lionel Laurent's piece on a billionaire buying entree into the Paris elite. He's looking at a billionaire from the Czech Republic making a play for a French institution.
He is talking about the French newspaper Le Monde, who's got incredibly dense text and an evening publication. So it doesn't seem like it's something that would exactly be beloved by millennials, not to mention its circulation of about 300,000, nor is it a particularly mass market read. But here we've got Czech investor Daniel Kretinsky is buying a half stake, and the owner is a Lazard banker, Mathieu Pigasse, and his holding is reportedly valued at $38.6 million. This is the idea that there might be a full sale of the paper raised hackles internally and sparked fears at the Elysee Palace about foreign ownership of domestic media. So here we've got the Czech investor buying a half stake.
Are these concerns valid?
Yeah, I should clarify. The half stake is of Mathieu Piégassé's holding, so he owns 27% of Le Monde Group.
Okay.
But the ownership questions are nevertheless valid, because for every wealthy lifeline that works out in the media sphere, such as Jeff Bezos's hands-off approach at the Washington Post, there are others that don't. I mean, you look at, for example, Sam Zell's takeover of Tribune. That was a debt-fueled takeover, and it drove it into bankruptcy.
So why is this stake being sold at all for Le Monde?
I mean, maybe the owner doesn't like the business anymore. France has got limits on press ownership and the media's reliance on state subsidies, and the creaking newspaper retail networks leave the industry in constant need of funds. But Laurent says that the Czech tycoon is at least publicly making the right noises. He's talked up the need for a free press to defend liberal democracy against populism and as a counterweight to the excesses of Silicon Valley's social networks. Making profit is not the aim, he says, which is probably just as well.
Interesting. And, you know, given the fact that we have seen obviously so much turmoil in France with the yellow vest protests and, you know, so much dissent in that society, it's going to be very interesting to see, whether bigger backing of newspapers in that part of the world will add something to the atmosphere there.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And Laurent does make the point that, you know, if he wants to have this sort of political view sort of supported, the idea of pushing against populism, that's one thing. But Laurent also makes the astute point that this guy's main business is energy by the power utility EPH, and France is in the middle of overhauling its state energy portfolio. So there might be another goal. It's just to exert some influence.
All right. Bloomberg opinion editor Jennifer Ryan, thanks as always for being with us from our London bureau. And you can read more of these and other stories from Bloomberg Opinion at Bloomberg.com/opinion. And on the Bloomberg terminal, customers can type OPIN Go on the search bar. Karen.
All right, Nathan, thank you. It's 5:54 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Law Report. Let's get to the legal stories we're watching this morning with Steve Podisk in the Bloomberg 99.1 Washington newsroom.
More than a dozen banks face renewed allegations that they conspired to fix prices in the $550 billion secondary market for unsecured bonds issued by Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. A new lawsuit filed in federal court in Manhattan alleges State Street Bank and Trust fired an entire department to cover up its biased motivations for firing a group of executives. And businesses are reviving their challenges to an OSHA rule requiring many employers to report on-the-job injuries and illnesses to the Federal Job Safety Agency annually.
Bloomberg Law. Everything you need, all on one legal research platform, including guidance, analysis, and Bloomberg Market Intelligence. Find out more at BloombergLaw.com.
Thanks, Steve. Now, in other legal news we're watching this morning, an old unconventional idea is becoming new again, court packing or expanding the number of justices on the Supreme Court. Democrats say the court is becoming too politicized, and they are increasingly looking to court packing as a solution. For more on this story, Bloomberg's June Grasso speaks to Harold Krent, dean of the Chicago Kent College of Law.
Howard, describe how court packing would work.
Well, there are actually an array of possibilities and proposals floating out there, but court packing itself would be the ability of the new administration, presumably a Democratic one, to add the number of justices on the Supreme Court. We currently have 9. If they added, say, to 12 or 15, that would increase the chances of a solid Democratic majority on the court.
How would they accomplish that? What would have to be done?
Congress would have to pass a law. It's clear that Congress has the power to alter the number of justices on the Supreme Court. It has done so from 6 to 7 to 10 back to 9 over the years, not having changed the number of justices since 1869. But there is a conventional consensus that Congress has the power, and that's what FDR proposed many, many years ago in the wake of the New Deal.
Now, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, as we've discussed, changed the rules when he got rid of the 60-vote threshold for the Supreme Court nominees. Do you see court packing as a response in kind, so to speak?
You know, it is. I think that it's hard to tell how much is political posturing now for the campaign and how much this is candidates are trying to see if this resonates on the trail and how much this is serious policy. I think there are other proposals out there are better from the policy perspective. Term limits for justices, for instance, or a rotation among appellate judges and the Supreme Court justices. I mean, those are, I think, are probably long-term proposals that are sounder in terms of their foundation. But, you know, the question is whether those will, again, have some kind of resonance on the campaign trail.
And that's Harold Krent, dean of the Chicago Kent College of Law, speaking with Bloomberg's June Grasso. You can listen to more legal analysis like this on Bloomberg Politics, Policy, Power, and Law, weekdays at 12 p.m. Wall Street time here on Bloomberg Radio, and find more legal news at BloombergLaw.com. Attorneys will find exceptional legal research and business development tools there as well. Visit BloombergLaw.com for more information. S&P futures are up a point now, giving up some of their gains. Dow futures up 9, NASDAQ futures up 5. 10-year Treasury up 5/32, yield 2.59%, and the yield on the 2-year 2.45%, the 30-year yield at 3%, and the euro at $1.1348. And Bloomberg Daybreak continues. This is Bloomberg.